Mr. Foreman, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Larry Foreman on behalf of the defendant below, Bernard Morello. What we have today is a situation where a knowledgeable and informed real estate investor, on one day's advance notice, with no exercise of due care at all, comes in and buys a piece of property, a house and a lot, in central Omaha, Nebraska, in 2012, through his nominee for $8,000. Then he comes back.
Too good to pass up, huh?
Too good, yes, too good to be true. And this is in a neighborhood where the other houses that have access vehicularly, the average price is about $91,000. But he's got this thing now for $8,000, and the only main difference between the property here for $8,000 and the properties around him for $91,000 is that his property does not have direct vehicular access. And so we think there are three things I'd like you to focus on in the few moments that I have with you today. First of all, we think that the plaintiff, by having a total disregard for due diligence, does not qualify for any equitable relief such as was given to him by Judge Gleason. Secondly, we think that if you look at the fact that he admitted that he had very little exposure to this property, he only saw it being utilized once for an easement, and he had no knowledge of prior use, and basically he didn't have any basis for making a claim of an easement. And third, the enormous disparity between the property value that he paid and the property values around him that shows what we call suspicious circumstances, which we think deprive him of the right to go to an equity court and get some relief.
Well, what evidence did the court rely on that there was an easement?
Well, the court, Your Honor, found that it said, and basically it was utilizing Hillary versus U.S. Cold Storage, and said that the easement was longstanding and it had been obvious. And the problem that we had with that was that in his own testimony, the plaintiff admitted that this was not obvious. He said in his deposition in Exhibit 1 at 31, he admits that the so-called easement is not easily detectable. He admits that a lot of people would have missed it. This would have been hard to detect. And when he went over for the only time that he even went by the property, drove by it and then peeked in the window, he made no mention of ever looking at the ground or seeing any evidence of an easement. So we just don't think that this qualifies as long-standing and obvious, which would be the requirements under Hillary versus U.S. Cold Storage. Does that respond to that question, sir?
I thought perhaps there were some other things in the record, but I appreciate your response. Yes.
Wasn't there a gravel driveway?
There's gravel on the lot, Your Honor. But
put gravel on the lot?
Well, there's no evidence as to who put it there, as to where it was put, as to how long ago it was put, and that was the thing that was frustrating.
Is there evidence what the purpose of the gravel was?
Don't know whether people wanted to be able to park on it, whether the owner of that property wanted to be able to utilize it for his own parking purposes or whatever.
But you're arguing that doesn't create an easement.
Don't believe it does, because we think this plaintiff seeking equitable relief needs to show that he was aware of prior use and that it was longstanding. And when he comes in his own testimony and says, you know, it was very difficult to see.
Does he need to prove that he was aware of that? Doesn't he need to prove that there was, in fact, longstanding use of the property as the use for which he asked the easement? He doesn't have to prove he knows of it, does he?
Well, if he's going to be relying and trying to basically deprive his neighbor then of the value of his property, because If you combine...
So if I buy a piece of property that's landlocked, and I've never seen it, but it's a good price, and I buy it, and there's a cattle trail that goes all the way to that property across the other neighbor's land, does that mean simply because I didn't know the cattle trail was there that I can't claim it as an easement?
Well, Your Honor, if you were to come in and admit that it was not obvious and that it was difficult to detect, then I think there'd be a problem.
Okay. Could you just refresh us on the facts on Hillary?
On Hillary versus Colton?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get into that deeply.
Okay.
I did. There was the one aspect, I think, where basically the court just said that it had to be long continued and obvious both. Those were the standards that were utilized. And so we felt that to the extent that Judge Gleason relied on that case, we just can't do that with this party.
So the judge decided on the basis, granted the easement implied prior use. Is that the theory under
prior,
which the
that's
easement?
That's exactly right, except, and he did not go with necessity.
Okay.
He went with prior use.
So that was the issue as decided.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct.
Lot 10 is unimproved, is that correct?
Lot 10 is unimproved, that's correct.
And it's immediately adjacent to Lot 9.
That's correct.
Is there anything on the ground that would denote the boundaries between the two lots, or even that there are two lots, and I'm speaking of something like a fence or a wall or something like that?
There is a fence, Your Honor, that is on the edge that separates the two lots and goes from, from basically north to south.
So
showing where the edge is of the other property, and there's, that's been there for I don't know how long.
Does that fence extend the entire north-south spread of Lot 10?
I don't know that. I believe that it does extend, though, the entire backyard of Lot 9 and separates those two.
So parts. Your view of the record is that if gravel driveway there be, it's only up to the fence when you're westbound? And you cannot drive, and that you is that your view of the record? You cannot drive to number 9?
Well, we'd prefer you didn't think of it as a driveway, Your Honor. We'd prefer you think of it as gravel on a lot, but you can have a gravel.
You're saying if you're westbound on the gravel, you end at a fence, and therefore there's no gravel on 10?
I don't believe there's
any
evidence.
I mean on 9?
I don't believe there's any evidence of any gravel on 9. We also,
is Lot 10 a buildable lot? Could you build a house on Lot 10?
It's not that large, no, Your Honor. But basically, to the extent that you're
what
going
can
to...
What can you do with it?
Well, you could use it for instance, I think it's been utilized for placing campaign signs and doing various things of that nature. But no, it's not big enough to actually build a house. So
you would say the easement interferes with your use of the property?
Well, we would say that to the extent that this easement is allowed across our property, what it does is to, in effect, create a situation where the property of NOM is then benefited by the entire size of our tract without having paid anything for it. And so all of a sudden, then, you have eliminated the main difference in the value of the NOM lot, which was obtained for $8,000 by NOM's nominee. That's the principal difference between that lot and the other lots there, because those lots do have vehicular access.
What is the value of
NOM
lot,
doesn't.
What is the value of Lot 10?
The value of Lot 10? I don't know that, Your Honor. I'm not sure what it was.
Is its only value the fact that it's ground on which a campaign sign can be placed?
I don't think there was ever any evidence at the trial, Your Honor, as to what the value of 10 was.
But you can't develop it for anything?
No. No,
okay.
You can't. So basically, we think that if you look at the failure of any due diligence when this fellow buys this property, we don't think he's entitled to the benefits that would flow from somebody to somebody who was exercising due diligence.
Well, how do you get to Lot 9 if you can't go over Lot 10?
Well, you can get to it, Your Honor. It abuts a street, and that's the point we were trying to get to before with the fact that when you have a property abutting street right-of-way.
So there's access to the property.
There is. There's foot access, yes.
You just can't park.
You can't park, but you can walk right up there. The city put a lot of money.
Do you think that the third element in Hillary with respect to reasonable necessity, that it would be a reasonable necessity to access a home by a vehicle?
Don't think that follows, Your Honor, because basically there are all kinds of examples where living quarters do not have direct access for a vehicle, whether it's an apartment, whether it's a condo, whatever.
That's a different question. This is a single-family dwelling.
It is a single-family dwelling.
And do you think it would be reasonable necessity to be able to approach the single-family dwelling in a vehicle?
Well, I think there are all kinds of people who do not have vehicles for one reason or another who would be able
that's
to make
an answer
employees.
To a different question.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to avoid your question, but I'm saying because Judge Gleason basically dispensed with the requirement of necessity and just went with the fact that it was long continued and obvious, and we don't believe that there's any evidence. This guy says that he drove by it once and didn't look down at all. There was no evidence he ever looked at the ground or had any idea that there was any kind of gravel there or any kind of an easement there.
The legal theory relied upon by the trial court was easement by implication?
Easement by implication because of he found that there was this, under Hillary, the standard was if it was long continued and obvious.
But there was, it was not based on adverse possession or prescriptive easement.
No, sir. No, sir.
And the court expressly disclaimed necessity.
It said at the end of its discussion about the case involving Hillary, it said, since we found it was long continued and obvious, we don't need to get into the necessity aspect.
So you're reading that as it was not an easement by necessity.
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Wright, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. My name is Damian Wright, and I represent the appellee, NAMN LLC, which was the plaintiff in the trial court below. One thing that I want to correct right off the bat is that, to the best of my recollection, there is no fence between the properties. There are photographs of the properties in the record. I don't have copies in my file here today, but my recollection is there's no fence between the properties, nothing separating lots 9 and 10. There is a fence to the south of the properties, in other words, in front of the house, abutting Center Street, because there's a retaining wall. That retaining wall sits.
So this was an implied easement by long and continuous use, is that what we're saying it is?
Correct.
What's the evidence of long continued use?
Well, Your Honor, to back up and give a big picture view, what seems obvious to me, the obvious inference from the record, is that in 1993, the city of Omaha decided that it was going to build a retaining wall in front of the house. And if you look at the photographs of the house, there is a garage in front of the house. There appears to obviously have been a former connect to Center Street to the south of that house. In 1993, the city decides it's going to build a retaining wall, and so it deeds Lot 10 to Anita Fuentes, who at the time was the owner of Lot 9, and then installs this curb ramp off of 42nd Street. It just seems to me to be an obvious quid pro quo of, we're building the retaining wall, we're going to give you, it's going to cut off your access to the front of your house, so we're going to give you side access, we're going to give you this lot. I don't know how the city acquired that lot or how long it had owed it, but it owned it. But it seemed that at the time of the retaining wall, the city installs this curb ramp and gives access over Lot 10 to Lot 9.
So for a number of years then, prior to this time, the prior owner had been using the Lot 10 for side access to the premises.
Correct. It appears that in 1993, Anita Fuentes becomes the owner of those lots. And that, by all circumstantial evidence, appears to be why this happened and how access...
So then does she not pay taxes on Lot 10? Is that what happens?
It falls through a series of owners. What actually happens, so this is interesting too, in 1999, she deeds Lot 9, which is the residence, to somebody else. She doesn't deed Lot 10. Lot 10 is not a buildable lot. It's a grass lot. There's nothing you can really use it for. By all accounts, as far as I can tell, it looks like it was simply a mistake in that she deeds Lot 9, forgets about Lot 10, and nobody cares. Because Lot 10 is just, it's a nothing. There's nothing there, and no use can be made of it.
So when does she deed Lot 9?
Lot 9 is in 1999.
And do the people, are the residents there then?
It was deeded to two people by the last name of Sindelar.
Do they continue to use Lot 10 then for parking and access?
As far as we can tell, there's no direct evidence, but again, the circumstantial evidence is that when Lot 9 and Lot 10 become joined, Lot 10 is used for ingress and egress.
Well, did somebody testify to that?
No, Your Honor. We couldn't locate anybody else to testify.
I'd like to be clear about what the theory here is. You're not claiming that there's an express easement across Lot 10. Express written easement,
correct.
Not recorded.
Correct.
So we're dealing strictly with things on the ground, not in the public record.
Correct.
And you're not claiming, or at least the district court did not grant relief on the theory of easement by necessity.
Correct. The district court didn't grant relief.
And you're also not claiming, and the district court did not grant relief based on a prescriptive easement, that is, acquisition of a right to do so by continued use for more than the statutory period of 10 years.
That's correct.
So the only theory that's in front of us is an easement by implication, which derives from the period of common ownership. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, that's helpful.
Thank you. Does the law favor easements by implication?
Your Honor, I would say I don't know whether they're favored or unfavored. One thing I do know is that there is a distinction between an easement implied by grant and an easement implied by reservation.
Isn't that more often the language of strict necessity cases?
When an easement is reserved, then there is usually a strict necessity as opposed to an easement by grant. And this would have been an easement by grant. And what I mean by that is that when Anita Fuentes severs the lots, she gives off the residential lot, and she is, by implication, under our theory, granting an easement across the lot that she still retains.
Because she doesn't reserve.
Right, an easement by reservation would be the reverse of where I'm giving you a lot, but I still have rights in the lot that I'm granting. And
if you were, although I'm not 100% in agreement, if I may say, with the grant reserve analysis, nevertheless, grants are more favored than reservations in the law?
Correct, because if I'm going to grant you property, I'm giving with you, by implication, rights that may be necessary, and
idea of protecting a reasonable expectation.
Correct. And so if use was made at that time, and I'm granting you property, and there's an obvious use of ingress and egress, and I then grant you, sever those tracks and grant you property, there's an implication there that I'm also granting with you uses that are ancillary to you reasonably use and enjoy the property.
Does the record tell us the conveyance from Juanita to the Sindelars, was that a general warranty deed, special warranty deed, quit claim, or is the record silent?
It's in the record. All the deeds are in the record, the chain of title. My recollection is it was a warranty deed, but it is in the record.
Thank you.
You don't believe it's a special warranty deed?
I don't recall. One other point I would like to make about opposing counsel's testimony that my client stated that he didn't know this, that it was difficult to miss. What he was actually saying in context was that it was difficult to miss that these two lots weren't actually one lot. This 42nd and Simmer Street area is a pretty familiar area to anybody who's in Omaha. The judge, Gleason, as a matter of fact, said I can picture it in my head. Mr. Roethlisberger at trial testified he had driven by it At one time, years prior, he had stopped and looked at the property, and I think he even looked in the windows or something. What he was actually saying was, to all the world, these appear to be one lot, and this appears to be a driveway. These appear to be joined properties. And he was saying that his I don't know whether it was a title company, but the person who had made him aware of this opportunity to buy this real estate and had sold him this had missed the fact that he wasn't getting lot 10, that it was only lot 9. So he wasn't saying that the driveway is not obvious. It's obvious that this is a gravel driveway, that there's a permanent curbway ramp for that purpose.
It's like, is that a curb cut?
It is. It's a ramp, just like you would have for a driveway leading from the street up to the lot. And then the lot is grass, but then there's gravel where you would have a driveway.
And then there's a sign that delineates driveways.
Correct.
Does the record tell us when or the circumstances under which that sign was placed there?
No, nothing in the record. But I did want to clear
that. The trial court referred to those as facts.
Correct. Correct. And so the trial court wrote a well-organized and cogent order. It lays out the three factors for an easement implied for former use. It goes through each one of those. The only one that I see that is really being attacked by appellant in their brief is this issue of necessity. And I think this is sort of the crux of the argument as to whether...
I'm sorry. In the brief, there is no argument with respect to long and or obvious. Is that correct?
Correct. Okay. Correct. They assign several assignments of errors. There are only four sections of arguments. Two of them are kind of, I condense them into an equitable argument. And then there is an argument about that the court overlooked necessity, but the court explicitly in its order says that the standard is reasonable necessity, and the defendant is really making an argument based on strict necessity. And Judge Gleason finds that under the lower standard of reasonable necessity that has been met. And then the appellant also attacks the finding that there's necessity when property abuts a public road. And I think the case law, the restatement of servitude is helpful on this, but in today's day and age, for residential property, it's reasonably necessary to have vehicular access. The appellant seems to be making the argument that, well, pedestrian access, as long as you can walk up to your home, that's sufficient. And I don't believe that to be the case under the general way.
And do you have authority for a reasonable necessity in an easement by implied to a residence includes vehicular access?
What I've cited in my brief is the restatement of servitudes, and what it actually says is that in a comment section, it says that traditionally pedestrian and vehicular access have been included as being reasonably necessary. It then goes on to say that in today's day and age, there are other things such as utilities and other ancillary uses that could also.
But if you buy the property for $8,000 or $9,000, don't you buy it with the idea that you don't have access?
No, Your Honor. Again, my client thought that he did. He thought that these two lots were together. He got it at a foreclosure sale. That's in the record. Lot 10 was also purchased at a foreclosure sale, and I don't know whether his cost is in the record, Judge, but I.
Those are both tax foreclosures.
Correct. Correct. And one
who bought first?
That's what I was going to get to. My client bought first. When my client bought his property, Anita Fuentes, the original grantor who severed the tracks, still owned Lot 10. So I think he could have undoubtedly brought an action against her when she owned it, saying she severed these properties. He is a successor to her chain of title, and that she owes him an easement. It just so happens that then about 2 months or a month and a half later, Mr. Morello, the defendant, acquires this property.
Kind of difficult to do when there's a tax foreclosure, though, isn't it?
Difficult to bring an action against her? Perhaps. Unless there are any further questions, I would. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? He is over. There is no time for rebuttal, so that concludes arguments for today. The court is adjourned, and you are excused.